You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Hello, pleasant purveyors of podcast puzzling, pondering about playhouses. Welcome to Good Job Brain, your weekly quiz show and offbeat trivia podcast. This is episode 186, and I am your humble host, Karen, and we are your, this is a good one, footy playing goody foodies who are not snooty, moody, or have cooties. Also, we talk about duty.
I no longer have cooties. It's true. I'm Colin.
I'm Dana.
And I'm Chris.
Yay, Dana's back.
Yes.
Oh, hi.
I'm so happy to be back.
Oh, nice to see you.
Yeah.
All healthy and well rested.
That's right.
And this episode is brought to you by Harry's. Harry's.com, purveyor of awesome shaving goods. And guys, it's time for another Karen's Marathon, this time in Montana.
Oh.
So time to make myself aerodynamic.
Time to shave up.
Time to shave up. Yeah. And I got my Good Job Brain Orange Harry's razor kit. I love it that it comes in Good Job Brain Orange.
Oh, right.
And make sure I shave my legs.
Don't want that drag.
Cut down on the wind resistance. Yeah.
Going 10 minutes, like 10 minutes per mile.
I'll believe you're serious when you shave your eyebrows.
Ooh. Oh. Is that a dare?
Don't do that.
No, I'm not daring you.
But you can draw,
I could not bear being responsible for that.
What, you can what,
and I can draw it back.
You can what?
I can
you
draw
need
it.
Your eyebrows, because when you start sweating from your forehead, it's all going to go in your eyballs. It's going to be the worst.
It's a functional
headband.
Thing.
Headband.
Yeah, which is probably less aerodynamic than just keeping the eyebrows.
Yeah.
Headband with eyebrows printed on them.
Right. Well, that's why they wore all the sweatbands in the 80s, because we hadn't evolved eyebrows yet.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah.
I got most of my stuff packed. I'm going to Missoula, Montana for the Missoula Marathon. Actually, I'm going there for a couple races. There's the 5K and also there's a beer run. So along with all the stuff I packed, in case if you're wondering, some of our runners in our packing list include our clothes, but we also use something called Body Glide, which is a lubrication that you have to put it like between your legs or your armpits.
Oh, chafing.
Anti-chafing. Mm. And of course, before I do that, I usually also have to shave to make sure everything is smooth. I mean, that's the thing. I'm not really shaving because, I mean, sure, I'll feel aerodynamic, but a lot of it is chafe.
Mm.
A lot of it is you're out there for 5 hours sweating, and, you know, it just gets really uncomfortable. So this is why I bring my Harry's razor kit with me. And don't worry, girls can use it too, not just guys. Harry's razors are German engineered 5-blade cartridges. They're up to 5 now. So you get a close shave, no cuts, no burns, quality guaranteed, and full refund if you're not happy. And I want to do a call out. You can buy a different, the razor, and you can buy the handle, and you can buy things separately, but I really like the kit that they have.
Yeah.
I use the Truman kit because it comes in like nice packaging.
Yeah. I like the little protective cap that comes on the razor is new. I remember their earlier kits didn't have that. I like that.
So for just $15, you can get the razor, the moisturizing shaving cream, and you get 3 razor blades. And of course, we have a special offer for you because Harry will give you $5 off your first order with the promo code BRAIN.
That's a really good deal.
So go on over to Harry's. That's HARRYS.
It's a beer run.
You
drink
go to
beer
the store
afterwards.
Oh, okay.
Oh. No, yeah.
Not during.
No.
Yeah.
That's the beer mile.
Consecutively.
The beer mile is you drink
simultaneously.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
And then the beer run is you run, and then at the end you celebrate with a beer. So, usually for these.
What?
Like,
how is that different than normal running?
It conveys that there's guaranteed beer.
Oh, okay.
At the end.
Not just optional beer.
Are you going to have pizza at the end?
Yeah.
For your pizza race.
That's called pizza run.
They have those too, where you eat during pizza.
Oh, really?
What? Yeah. Really?
It's disgusting. Have you done that before?
Where's, no. That's gross.
Where is it? That's and why haven't you done it?
It's in New York.
It's the Cramps International. Yeah. It's a good series of racing.
A couple episodes ago, we talked about the Triple Crown of Thoroughbred Horse Racing.
Yes.
Do you guys know what the Triple Crown of Hiking is?
Oh.
No.
There is such a thing.
Okay. All right.
Is it like Everest K2 and
in the US, in America.
I'm going to guess it's like Appalachian Trail, Pacific Crest Trail. Oh man, what's the, I don't know. There must be a third one that I'm just
Las Vegas Strip.
I'm guessing it's like the major transcontinental trails.
Continental Divide.
Oh,
yes.
Okay.
Colin being our camper and hiker of the group. Good job. Triple Crown of Hiking is the Appalachian Trail, the Pacific Crest Trail, and the Continental Divide Trail.
Wow. I've done a good portion of the Continental Divide through Colorado. That was one of my favorite hiking trips ever. That was great.
Carrying bags of poop.
The total length of these three trails is about 7,900 miles. That's 12,700 kilometers. It's like, I don't know if you guys read, what is the novel, Wild?
Yeah. Cheryl Strayed.
It's not like, oh, fun hike. It's like you have a compass, you're going through snow, you're going through extreme conditions. And it's very, very cool. And what's even cooler is I'm sharing this because one of our super fans, good job, bring super fans, is on his way to complete all three.
Whoa.
At the age of 8.
What?
Yes.
Wow.
Get out of town.
Let me read this letter from a family of listeners from Dion. Hello, team. I am a long distance hiker and father of Buddy Backpacker. The youngest person to hike the Appalachian Trail, Pacific Crest Trail, and Colorado Trail. We're also 1,000 miles in on the Continental Divide Trail this year. My kid now is 8, and you are his world. I'm getting verklempt. We often remember the greatest parts of the trail with what episode of Good Job Brain we were listening to when we were there. You've educated us during some of the hottest days and then kept us laughing during some of the coldest. Thank you for being such a huge part of our lives and helping him break a new world record every year.
Wow.
So Buddy Backpacker, whose real name is Christian, he has broken a couple of records.
That's humbling for many reasons.
I know. Yeah. Not least of which, I don't remember episodes of Good Job Brain at all.
You really don't.
I can all tell you this is true.
Dion and Andrea are his parents, Buddy Backpacker's parents. Their whole family goes with him, and they have their little travelogue and
that's
progress.
Really cool.
You can check it out at buddybackpacker.com. There's a little GPS thing, so you can kind of follow them.
That's awesome.
Really, really inspiring. So if you're listening right now to us, Buddy, we wish you the best of luck, and we're always going to be here entertaining you on your journey. So Dion, Christian's dad, gave us some cool facts.
All right.
Some questions too, some trivia questions. So what is the highest mountain in the lower 48 states?
I know.
What is it?
I'll give you guys a...
No, you can shine.
I believe it's Mount Whitney.
Correct. Buddy climbed that at 6 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Go, Buddy.
What is the first United States national park?
Colin's like, you guys don't.
It's a big one.
Is it Jellystone?
It is Yellowstone.
Okay, all right. Yes. Yeah.
Also except Jellystone.
On the Continental Divide Trail, Dana and Chris,
sure.
What is the deepest lake in the United States? It's on the West Coast.
Salt Lake City? Or the Great Salt Lake.
Incorrect. No. Colin, take a shot. I know you know.
You've
been there.
Yeah, I have been there. It's either Crater Lake or Tahoe.
It's Crater Lake.
Yeah, okay.
Oh.
Deepest lake and 7th deepest in the world.
Yeah.
Wow.
Which makes me think, what is deepest in the world? Mm. I don't know off the top of my head. We can look it up later.
Crater Lake is really cool.
Yeah, because it's like a perfect circle.
It's inside an old volcano. Yeah. So it's like a perfect circle. There's no like inbound flow. The water's super clear, really cold. It's beautiful.
It's in Oregon, right?
That's right. It's in Oregon.
Yeah. Wow. And here's a bonus butt themed question.
Good.
What animal gives its name to a place to poop while hiking?
Okay.
The honey badger.
If it's what I'm thinking of, what animal do we allow to poop inside our houses?
Cat.
It's a cat hole. Colin used to talk about you take it with you or you poop and you gotta pick up your poop. You poop in what you call a cat hole.
Yeah.
Because you like
kind of
dig out something. Yeah. And
exactly. You dig it out. Dig it out nice and deep if you're going to do that in the woods. Yeah, don't just do it like 1 inch below the surface. Wow.
Isn't that cool?
That is really cool. Yeah, I'm going to be going camping actually in just a few weeks, and we'll be doing a very short quarter of a mile section of the Pacific Crest Trail, just a fraction of what Buddy Backpacker is doing. So I will think of you guys when I'm out there.
So keep on trucking, buddy, and have fun finishing your Continental Divide Trail.
Wow.
And without further ado, let's jump into our first trivia segment, Pop Quiz Hotshot. Do you guys have all your answer buzzers?
Yes.
Yes. And I have here, I'm going to select a random Trivial Pursuit card, and these are all official Trivial Pursuit.
Good.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I'm a little bit of a snob when it comes to these cards.
Oh, Trivial Pursuit 90s.
Yeah.
Here we go. Blue Wedge, what city did Dr. Quinn bid adieu to when she headed west to become a medicine woman?
Wow.
Whoa.
Wow, that's deep.
Boston.
Correct.
Oh,
God.
Wow.
Where did
Somebody's watched the first 5 minutes of Dr. Quinn Medicine.
I remember her first name was Michaela.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah, because people thought it was a spelling error, like Michael A.
And they just,
Quinn. And they're like, whoa, well, a lady doctor.
Oh, that's right. That right? is, yes.
Because it was like the pioneer.
Was it Old West or Pioneer or what was it?
Okay. Something like that.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Good job, Chris. All right. Pink Wedge. Whose hair clippings... There's a typo on this card. There's no I.
Oh.
So it's clippings.
Okay. Clippings.
Yeah. Whose hair clippings did a Montana jail barber say she'd use to tie fishing lures called bombers?
What? Oh. Okay, a Montana jail
barber. Colin.
The Unabomber?
Yes!
Ted Kaczynski?
Yes, correct.
Huh. That seems in pretty poor taste.
Yeah.
Maybe a little unethical.
Mm-hmm. Weird.
Yellow Wedge, who turned over the reins of power to his handpicked successor, Thabo Mbeki?
Oh, Thabo Mbeki. Who turned over the... Okay.
Chris.
Idi Amin.
That was my guess, but incorrect. Wrong country.
No, it's South Africa, I believe.
Oh.
But who was immediately preceding him?
Right.
Nelson Mandela.
Yeah. Correct.
I didn't know if it was directly from him.
Purple Wedge, what 61-year-old, quote, edible memento from the Duke and Duchess of Windsor fetched $29,900 at auction? Everybody.
Wedding
it was a slice of wedding cake, right?
Oh, was it?
I don't know anything.
Chris just buzzes in and then thinks of an answer later.
She said everybody.
Everybody. I'm like,
I didn't know.
I don't know. What, a half-eaten Twinkie?
Wedding cake.
Yeah, I think Dana. Yeah, I think wedding cake.
Wedding cake. 61-year-old wedding cake.
Delicious.
Well, you're supposed to put it in the freezer, right?
I guess.
Yeah.
We didn't do that. Yeah, I don't know.
Do you still have it?
Oh, no.
It goes in the freezer.
Freezer. No, we didn't do that.
And you're supposed to eat it every year.
That
seems weird.
No, not every year.
On special.
First anniversary or whatever, something like that.
There's an old one, too. You keep it for a really long time.
Yeah.
Green Wedge, what hip hoopster, not hip hop.
Hipster.
Hip hoopster spoke pseudo-French trash talk he called Inspirado.
Hipster. All right, 90s.
Mine is so quiet.
Dennis Rodman.
Correct.
That's a great guess.
Yep.
This is getting quieter.
Okay.
Batteries
are dying for that one, too. Last question, Orange Wedge. What was the first Windows edition named for a year instead of a version?
We've had this so many times. Windows 95.
We had this on the 95 card. This is just general 90s.
They're recycling.
What is this?
Yeah.
Spelling mistakes.
Yeah.
Recycled questions.
I guess they don't think you're going to play every single card.
Get out of here, card.
They put that card toward the back of the tray. They're like, they're never going to get to this card.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Good job, brains. Okay, today's episode. Since we started recording Good Job Raina, we get a lot of topic suggestions from fans on Twitter, on Facebook, in email, in person sometimes. And this one is a pretty popular one.
Uh-huh.
Everybody wants this episode?
Yeah.
Huh.
Huh.
And it is on the subject of eggs.
Okay.
A lot of egg-loving people out there.
Now, you said it was a requested topic, but I don't think I realized it was so popularly requested.
Right.
Yeah. I guess it is a really interesting concept or thing to talk about. So this week, we're talking about eggs.
When I'm hungry, you know I'm on a Jones for eggs. Fettuccine and Alamo, in the kitchen where the pros go. I'll cook you something pro bono.
Chris, you can go first. Let's crack this open.
So I have a voice recording that I want to play for you guys. That is me having a conversation with somebody recently, a couple of weeks ago, that is highly relevant to this podcast. And I did not know it would be so relevant when we had this conversation, but here it is. So I have to say, before we start,
please.
Well, I did start. Your scrambled egg YouTube video changed my life.
I'm so pleased.
Changed.
Are you the beneficiary
my life.
Of that?
Sometimes.
Everybody is the beneficiary.
Yeah, everyone has benefited from this.
I'm amazed how big that's gone. I think it's like 15 million, Justin said. It's something that we cook so often. So we're going to do it right.
Yeah.
Do it absolutely beautiful.
Well, I just never learned how to do that. I mean, you just grow up learning like, well, you know, you take a frying pan, you put the eggs in, you burn them, and then you kind of chop it up. And Yeah.
And also, I think for me, it's one of the sexiest ways of having breakfast with your partner. Because when they're done, fluffy, light, delicious, finished with smoked salmon, they're mind-blowing. Yeah. So I love it.
Yes.
Whoa, so, who was that mystery guest?
Yeah.
In case
sounds
you
familiar.
Tell, well, that was Chef Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah.
Couldn't tell without the F-bombs.
He didn't call you a donkey.
Yeah. I was going to ask him to, but it just felt a little weird.
He's like, oh, that's for a small fee, I'll call you a donkey.
Chef Gordon Ramsay.
Chef Gordon Ramsay. He's releasing a video game, Gordon Ramsay Dash, which is actually out right now on your cell phone. But I really wanted to talk to him about a scrambled egg recipe because he's got this video, a YouTube video, that, as he said, has 15 million views about, and he tells you how to make scrambled eggs. And it, for me, was like life-changing because I eat scrambled eggs all the time and I did not realize like the techniques that you could use to not totally ruin scrambled eggs. Like, I never realized how good scrambled eggs could be if you just simply changed a couple of things about the method by which you created them. So I want to nerd out about cooking for a little bit, and I want to... This is one of those good job brain, this is going to change your life moments. I just want to talk to you about scrambled eggs and how to make amazing scrambled eggs. So this is how you can really ruin scrambled eggs immediately, is if you take a pan and put it on the stove and turn the heat on and then put butter into it and wait for the butter to melt, right? You know, this is a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And then you take the eggs in a bowl and you whisk them all together and then you pour the eggs into the hot pan. At that point, you've already started burning the eggs. Eggs are so sensitive to heat that if you take them and just pour them into a hot pan that you've just melted butter in, you might start burning them immediately. Or browning. I mean, you don't want to brown them. Pour it into the pan, they get all brown on the underside, and you chop it all up, and it's like, I mean, it's scrambled eggs. It's like, no, you ruined an omelet, is what you did. So what Gordon Ramsay suggests is this. You take like a saucepan. So you don't start out with a frying pan. You can do a frying pan, but really, just take a saucepan. Put it cold on the stove. Just put it on the stove. Don't turn the heat on yet. Crack all the eggs into it. You can whisk them in a bowl if you want, but you're going to be constantly stirring anyway, so you can just put the eggs right in the pan.
No oil?
No oil. Nothing will stick. You take butter, like a tablespoon of butter for 3 eggs-ish.
Okay.
And just put it right in with the eggs.
Uh-huh.
And as you're cooking the eggs, the butter is going to melt and it's going to go all throughout everything. It's all going to become one organism. So
what delicious way to describe it.
So then what you do is this. The really important part is managing the heat. You don't want to have too much direct heat on the pan because that is how you'll burn the eggs. You certainly don't want to walk away. So, I mean, what you're doing is you're just constantly stirring the eggs, and they're going to start to set up. And at the point where they kind of start to form and come together, you take the pan off the heat and keep stirring them until they're kind of like, they'll cook a little bit more. And then when they kind of stop setting up, then you put it back on the heat. And it's like, you put it back on the heat, heat the pan up a little bit more, and then
take
pull
it
off. And just let the residual heat that's in the metal pan.
So you're just doing it gradually, bit by bit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you can also, some people will cook eggs really, really slowly over really, really low heat. Mm-hmm. And like 30 minutes later, they'll have really good scrambled eggs.
That's always been my technique.
You,
yeah.
But you don't have to do that. All you're doing with the slow technique is, no magic is happening. You're just not burning the eggs. You can turn the heat all the way up to high. Just as long as you're managing it and making sure that you only get the pan slightly hot, then pull it off.
That makes so much sense.
Again.
That makes so much sense.
It's just about not letting the temperature of the eggs get too high. When they'll still look a little bit, if they still look a little bit wet, they're done. Like, not runny, but just a little wet. If you wait until they don't look wet anymore.
It's too dry. Too late.
They're too dry. And even if they're perfect in the pan, by the time you stick a fork in and eat them, they continue to cook. So what Gordon Ramsay does is takes creme fraiche, which is basically like fattier sour cream. You can probably find it at your supermarket if you can't just use some sour cream, and adds it in right at the end, right when the eggs are done.
Oh, to cool it down.
And that cools it down. And it takes down the temperature. Mm. It sucks some of the heat out. The heat goes into the creme fraiche, and it just basically like...
makes it creamy.
It stops things. It does. Oh. It adds a little bit of a creaminess, and it adds a little bit of the depth of flavor,
but
it's really about...
It's about temperature.
It's like a fixative.
Yep. And then at that point, remember, you haven't salted or peppered anything yet. At that point, throw a little bit of salt and pepper in. If you're not going to use creme fraiche, I mean, if you like cheese in your scrambled eggs, like that's a good time to throw in the cheese. Mm. Just like throw in the cold thing that takes the temperature down. Also, if you want your scrambled eggs to continue to be hot, don't put them on a cold plate.
Right.
Because the cold plate will just suck all the heat right out of it. And then you got a pile of cold scrambled eggs. Huh. So you might warm the plate up in the oven on low. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. Now, I really wanted to advance this topic for Good Job Brain.
Okay.
Yo,
so I decided to see, are there any other chefs on YouTube, because that's, you know, the only place I could think to look, who would show me other methods of making scrambled eggs? And yes, indeed. So Jamie Oliver.
Oh, another Brit.
Indeed. He did the British method of scrambled eggs, just like Gordon Ramsay. And then also he did a video about French style scrambled eggs. And the difference, the primary difference is they use the double boiler method. So they have a pot of boiling water on the stove. You put a glass bowl sitting on the pot of boiling water.
Huh.
And so then the eggs, now you cannot burn these eggs. The idea of burning, you can't burn them.
Right.
Because the temperature of the eggs is always going to be the temperature of the boiling water. Like,
yeah.
it's not going to get any hotter than that. That's why you do a double boiler to, you know, melt chocolate and things like that.
Mm.
So you do the eggs in a double boiler. It takes a little bit longer, but not that much longer.
That's the French style.
That's the French style.
I've never
that's
seen
what they
that
do.
Done.
And then again,
that
at the end,
makes
you can
so much more
right
sense.
At the end. And again, you can let it sit there. Not that you should let it sit there, but even if you accidentally do, like, they're not going to burn. And you get that. I mean, you take them out of a double boiler, scrambled eggs. I mean, they're so good. Like, the flavor is so delicious. There's
so
a little bit more cleanup because now you've just used, probably because of the cleanup. I'd probably just stick with using the nonstick saucepan. Oh, importantly, almost forgot to say this, a silicone spatula.
Oh, yeah.
That, when you're stirring the eggs, that's what you're constantly scraping the pan with.
Oh, it won't
with.
Build up into a giant egg
the
comet?
Film, no.
You don't want the film, so you're using a silicone spatula to keep reincorporating that back in. When you are done, you just scrape out all the scrambled eggs, and they just come right out of the pan. You should never have any egg burnt onto your pan, ever. And also, I do have a trivia question, which is, do you know which Beatles song was originally titled, given the working title, of Scrambled Eggs?
Oh, I feel like you... Karen does.
I don't. I'm just going to guess.
Go for it.
Because how many Beatles songs are there?
There couldn't be more than a dozen.
There can't
be that many.
Norwegian Wood.
No, it is.
Interesting.
Yeah, it is a song that has a three-syllable name, but I mean, that might not narrow it down very much. Dana.
Come Together?
It's not Come Together.
Oh, okay. Three-syllable name. I don't know.
So the song is actually, the song is actually Yesterday. So the song, as Paul McCartney was composing it, the original lyrics were, scrambled eggs. Oh, how I love your lovely legs.
No.
Not as much as I love scrambled eggs. Now, to be fair.
Are you trolling us?
No, he was not going to actually write the song that way. Yeah. But as a songwriter, when you have a melody,
you just
make up ridiculous lyrics to it so you don't forget the melody.
Got it.
That's a good one.
But originally it was, very popular Beatles trivia. It was originally Scrambled Eggs.
And then,
oh, my baby, how I love your legs. Not as much
but
as
But not as
scrambled
much.
Eggs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Colin brought another book to trivia again.
Oh, is it from the Straight Dope?
This is, yes. I have a little bit of from one of these Straight Dope books by Cecil Adams. This is, I have a question for you guys here that has been covered in Straight Dope Tells All. All right, I'm gonna greatly paraphrase this here. What end of the egg comes out of the chicken
first?
Is it the flat, rounded end or the narrow, pointed end?
I'm going to have
end?
To go with the narrow, pointed
narrow
end.
Narrow, pointed end.
Okay. Dana, what do you think?
To really,
I'll say the opposite.
Ease that sphincter muscle.
Yeah, that's what I think, too.
All right. This is a more fascinating answer than I could have imagined.
again, it's on the side.
I'll be paraphrasing Cecil's answer here. So he's talking about his initial thinking, and then he talked to Cornell University professor Kavus Keshavarz, a poultry czar, as he called him.
Wow.
Now, according to Professor K, the egg initially moves through the oviduct small end first. Okay. Okay, narrow end. When it reaches the uterus, however, it hardens. Okay, so that's when the shell calcifies.
Okay.
It rotates 180 degrees and then travels the rest of the way, big end first.
Whoa.
So it comes out of the chicken flat, big end first. And when you think about it like this, it makes a lot of sense. Because when it comes out that way, it's easier to squeeze it out. You know, if you imagine, like, if you were going to squeeze, like, you know, something through a rubber hose, you're squeezing on the narrow end to move it along.
Yeah.
So it squirts, in his words, it squirts forward and out into the cold, cruel world.
Aww.
When you look at the poop emoticon emoji, it has, like, the pointy end on top.
That's true. Well,
oh, that's true.
I suppose, although it's coiled, right? But, oh, you're right, it tapers. Yeah, you're right.
Wasn't that soft, though?
Yeah. So there we go. I would have never guessed that it actually makes the 180 degree turn. So I thought was pretty fascinating.
That's kind of the fascinating.
Yeah.
It's like a low.
That's the end of my science.
Season.
It's the end of my science contribution for today's show.
Beginning and the end of the science portion of today's.
No, I actually have.
Oh, yes,
a
science?
Few science questions.
Dropping some science, like
eggs
so
are
many
very
eggs.
Science. Yep. Yeah.
Eggs are very science.
They are very science. All right, I have a egg salad of a. Of a quiz for you guys. A little this and that. And you guys have post-its and markers, and it's all going to be multiple choice.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Write down.
It's a write down multiple choice quiz. So since we're talking about eating eggs, I want to start with, on average, do Americans consume more eggs per year than 1950, the same, or fewer eggs? On average, do Americans now, compared to the 1950s.
Oh, so per capita.
Per person in
per
America.
Per person. Okay.
Yes,
okay.
Per person in America on average per year.
More the same. Oh, that's weird.
Are we more eggy?
Because I feel like
same eggy,
low
less
carbon.
Eggy.
All right,
everybody. Okay, ooh. Karen and Chris say we eat more eggs. Colin says we eat fewer eggs. We eat fewer eggs.
Really?
Whoa.
Yes.
I thought that, like, the Atkins boom, the protein, like, just...
You know, in the last few years, we have eaten more than the years before that. But in 1950, people were eating about 374 eggs per year on average.
Whoa.
More than one a day.
Wow.
And now it's 251. So it's less than that, but
I can kind
still,
of see that.
Yeah.
I can kind of see that now.
My reasoning was like maybe like the anti-cholesterol, you know, beliefs of like
right.
the 70s
think,
and 80s, I think really drove. Yeah.
I think you're right. Mm-hmm. I think that's
That's so weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I grew up always thinking eggs are good for you.
No, there was this cholesterol stuff.
Their reputation has been rehabilitated a lot.
Okay. So looking at a chicken, how, like you have a chicken.
Yeah.
It has, it's a chicken. How can you usually tell whether its eggs will be white or brown?
Whoa!
Multiple choice. Is it by its feather color, its earlobe color, or its toe color? Like, usually there's a correlation.
They have earlobes?
Yes. Well, maybe. Maybe that's the...
Maybe Dana's a weirdo. I don't know.
Answer. Yeah.
All right. So Colin says feathers, Karen says leg, Chris says earlobe. It is earlobe.
Yes.
Chicken.
I didn't think that Dana would put that in there.
No. I don't know. Chickens do have earlobes. So chickens
where are they?
They're on their ear, you know.
Like, the bottom of their ears.
Yeah. Thanks.
Where you think they are. They do have ears. And right. Chickens with white earlobes usually lay white eggs. Chickens with red earlobes usually lay brown.
Oh, my God. They do have earlobes.
Oh. Yes.
I thought it was just brown eggs came from brown chickens, white eggs came from white chickens.
No.
Earlobes.
Yeah.
It's the thing next to their eyes. It looks like like blush, like cheek, like okay. It's their cheek.
Huh. Wow.
So usually, because there are some blue chickens with blue earlobes, they lay blue eggs.
No,
but sometimes they also lay white eggs around. So okay. There's like some.
Why
fuzzy,
can't I go by blue eggs?
They just don't mass produce those.
Yeah, probably not.
Chicken. Yeah.
Karen, guess what? Chicken earlobe.
All right. In the best-selling children's book, Green Eggs and Ham. What mammals does the character refuse to eat with? And then agree eventually
you
to
know,
eat with.
To be honest, I've never read that book.
Really?
Mm-mm.
You can... Okay, so here's a hint for these. I'm going to give you three animals for each of the multiple choice. And so here's like a little bit of a hint is think about rhymes. So is it a mouse, fox, and goat, a bear, pig, and dog, or a rat, cat, and tiger?
Say that again.
So A is mouse, fox, goat. B is bear, pig, dog. And C is rat, cat, tiger.
I have my reasoning.
All right.
Since I never...
Everyone says mouse, fox, and goat. Chris was house, box, and boat. Yes, those are the rhymes for it. Yeah.
I was like, that's the easiest to rhyme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, it would be really weird to eat them with a pig, right? If it's green eggs and ham. Right. That'd be really a little cruel.
It's totally fine to eat them with a mouse, fox, and goat.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Yeah, it's true.
It's not like a little mouse steak. You have to eat so many of those to get even
right.
Yeah.
Ooh.
The largest egg of any living bird is laid by, is it an ostrich, an emu, or a California condor?
The largest
egg from a bird. The largest egg is from a whale shark, but it's inside their bodies, and it's not a bird. So that's why I just wanted to, like, be as specific.
Wait, condor, ostrich, or emu?
Yeah. Colin says ostrich, Karen says emu, Chris says emu. It's an ostrich. Ostrich is the largest bird. Emu's the second largest bird.
Oh.
Ostrich eggs are about 3.6 pounds on average. Emu eggs are 1.5 pounds on average.
Wow.
Whew. And a condor is like 10 ounces. It's not, like, it's a very big bird.
Right.
Yeah. But it's not, yeah. Last question. This is about the Easter egg roll at the White House.
Oh! Uh-huh. So, my niece has been.
Oh, really?
My niece and nephew, yeah.
Oh, that's nice. So, Rutherford B. Hayes. Oh, sorry. Before I get into this, like, we have been consistently terrible at presidential trivia, at pub trivia lately. Like, I know that we used to be better at it. I think we were a little better. I think I was maybe a little better, but I've forgotten everything I know about the presidents.
We just bomb. We keep bombing.
Yeah.
It keeps happening.
It's embarrassing.
You gotta memorize the Animaniacs song. Yeah.
This is part of our getting better. I needed to include something about presidents in this.
All right. I like it.
Rutherford B. Hayes was the first president to host the annual Easter egg roll at the White House in 1878. As a side note, before that, it was happening, but it was on Congress lawn, and the kids were ruining the lawn, and they passed a law saying Congress's lawn cannot be a child's playground anymore, and then they moved it to the White House.
So Congress was literally the old men saying, get off my lawn.
Yeah.
They went on the White House lawn.
Yeah, and the president's like, it's cool.
I'm only here 4 years.
So who was the president when black children were first allowed to attend the Easter egg roll?
Whoa.
Was that Franklin D. Roosevelt, Dwight D. Eisenhower, or John F. Kennedy? This was an interesting story.
Huh.
What are the choices?
It's Roosevelt, Eisenhower, or Kennedy.
FDR Roosevelt, right?
Yeah. Oh, sorry. Yes. Yes. The second Roosevelt president.
Huh. That's a good question.
Man, these all seem
plausible.
All right. I was going to guess Johnson, but he wasn't on the.
So Collins Eisenhower, Karen's JFK, Chris's FDR. It was Eisenhower.
Wow.
So Mamie Eisenhower. Actually, so the Easter egg roll kind of got postponed for 12 years in the 50s or in the 40s. There was a war happening and,
you know.
So in 1953, Mamie Eisenhower was the first lady and they had the Easter egg roll. And she was like, oh, why are the black kids standing outside the gate watching the white kids play?
Oh,
this
no.
is weird. And so the next year she opened it up. She was like, hey, let's open.
Yeah.
This is awkward.
This is bad.
I don't
optics,
like this.
If
yeah.
anything else. Right. Standing outside the fence.
Just watching. So 1954 was the first year they opened
that's
it.
That's good.
And
good.
It was Mamie Eisenhower who felt super awkward about it.
Yes. So. Well, good for her. Yeah. Good for them eventually.
We get there eventually.
Egg rolls for everybody.
So that was my weird egg salad. Mm. Like all egg salad. It was
weird.
A little salty and weird. A little delicious.
Chopped us up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wanted to fit in.
Yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
All right, guys.
What?
Today's egg episode is the perfect vehicle for me to share more animal reproduction stuff.
Yeah.
Because that is my interest. My passion lies in finding out how animals reproduce. I want to preface this with the fact that I've been so addicted to one show on TV. This show is on Animal Planet and it's called Tanked. And is about the place that does custom fish tanks for the whole country. And it's they build custom crazy fish tanks for airports, for hotels, for celebrities. So the show mostly is about they meet a celebrity client and then they kind of listen to what they want and then they build this beautiful thing.
That sounds cool.
It is really cool. And it's pseudo reality. It's reality because they are building something, right? Mm-hmm. But you know, some of the setup might seem stagey or cheesy. But
somebody says, "I'm not here to make friends." Every episode,
there is one thing for certain. Watching so many episodes of this show is that even though they're jokesters and their personalities, there is no question that these guys are experts. And I think that's probably one of my favorite reality show genres is when people are experts and you see their craft.
Right.
And so they talk about the craftsmanship of building, the science behind it, the weight, the water.
Mm.
But my favorite part is when they go fish shopping. They go to a lot of tropical fish and rare fish dealers and they introduce so many different fish. And you learn a lot about different kind of fish reproduction. Like there are a couple fish that are mouth brooders where the fish have their eggs and they keep the eggs in the mom or the dad's mouth until mouth they hatch.
Brooders. Mouth brooders.
Mouth brooders. So they're not breeding from their mouth.
Got it.
Because the eggs are already laid.
Right. Yeah.
They're storing them.
To be clear.
And it's really weird because that one fish cannot eat during the whole time.
Wow.
Until the fry, the hatchlings come out. And so
is that to protect them from predators or is
Yep. It's all survival. But there is one fish. This was not in the tank show because I just went into a fish hole of like
fell down a fish hole,
fish egg hole.
Yeah.
And I just looked for interesting fish egg. So, do you guys know what the angler fish is?
Yes.
No.
Angler fish.
It's the one with the thing on the top with the light, right?
Yeah.
Oh.
It is one of the. Colin, you know, you definitely.
I guess.
An antenna.
Oh, and the little thing. I didn't know that's what they were called. Right.
Angler fish are monsters, basically. They look like monsters, and they live in very depths of the ocean or the sea, where it's completely dark. It's so far down, it is dark. The population of other animals is very, very sparse. It's cold. And you have this crazy fish that looks like a nightmare animal. And it has on top, there's a little lure. The lure has bacteria that's bioluminescent. And so it lights up. So it's
like a little lantern.
Yeah, it is. And it attracts other fish or other creatures to be like,
just swim right up to it.
Oh, what's that?
Like, what's that? That's cool.
Oh, no.
And the angler fish can eat the other creature whole, swallow it whole. Mm-hmm. It has an exploding jaw. It kind of looks like it has an underbite. So you can really, like,
you can
open
really
open it.
Oh, yeah.
Who knows when's the next time that this fish is going to bump into food.
Right.
So instead of like feeding constantly mini meals, like it's just like, I'll eat whatever I can get because it's so unpopulated under the ocean. In such extreme conditions, how do they reproduce? How do they reproduce? When scientists start kind of collecting them for research, they notice something. They're like, man, all of these anglerfish that we've captured are all chicks. They're all females. Bumped into a male anglerfish. Oh, by the way, anglerfish is not one species. It is an order. So there are many, many different types of angler fish or that use that angler bait, lure bait mechanic. And they all look ugly.
I just got it.
Oh,
like
I get
angler
it now,
is like, they have the lure.
They're fishing.
Yeah. Right.
They're fishing.
They're fishing fish. Fishing fish.
Oh my God.
But they didn't find males of any of them.
No, they're just
only
like, that's
find females of all.
They're like,
of them.
That's really weird. They're all female. Where are all the males? How are they reproducing?
They're eating.
And you know, like when you see an angler fish, they look kind of nightmarish. They have like gelatinous skin and they're bumpy and they have like sharp teeth. The scientists were like, yo, what are these weird bumps?
No.
What are these weird bumps on the anglerfish that we've captured? So the anglerfish, they're pretty small. They're actually like 10 centimeters long.
Wow.
So that's like 5 inches.
Tiny. Yeah. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
That's the female. The males are significantly smaller.
Huh.
How small? Millimeters.
What?
Millimeters. Some measure as small as 0.8 millimeters.
What?
It is tiny. And your female is 5 inches. Just like
that's
exponentially
crazy.
Larger.
Yeah.
So how would they meet when it you with this?
Sounds profoundly unsatisfying.
It sounds like Inner Space, you know, when they like shrunk somebody down and then just like sent them into the body
in order to
Dana's kind of almost right. So this is what happens because in the deep ocean, individuals are so sparsely populated, finding a mate is very, very hard. The tiny little male, they have either, some species have really strong olfactory sense for smelling and some have good eyes. The anglerfish male will seek out a female. And when it finds a female, it will open its little tiny, tiny mouth and bite onto the female. The male will release enzymes that basically will break down and fuse the mouth of the male to the body of the female.
Okay.
So that he becomes a part of her. They eventually share the same circulatory system.
No.
Wow.
Yes.
This is like some Lovecraftian level horror.
It is. So they become fused together and their blood vessels are one.
Wow.
And now the male fish is, he doesn't have to find a mate anymore. He found it. And he is attached to her. This is an example of parasitic reproduction.
Wow.
And the female now doesn't have to bump into a male. She always has a supply of sperm readily available to her if she decides to mate wherever, whenever, and the male cannot survive without the female. A female can have 6 to 8 males attached to her.
Wow.
So she's just dragging along.
That happens a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Does the female anglerfish trigger when the actual, like, fertilization happens? Or is it just, like, whenever she's ready, she's like, okay.
Whenever she's ready.
Wow.
She doesn't have to wait. For her, it's going to be energy. Like, is she going to have energy to output fertilize, you know, to have the eggs?
That's crazy.
Do they just have the eggs and then leave, or do they take care of the eggs?
They don't. They actually don't take care of them.
It's maybe okay, because if they had boys, then the boys would join her.
Would
too.
Just bite up. Just be an endless trap. Yeah.
Isn't that crazy?
That is crazy. That is
one of the craziest reproduction stories. And seriously, it's nightmare fuel, but it's really interesting to go do an image search on this. And you see, at first, like, you're like, oh, that's a gross anglerfish. And then you notice the little fused, weird fish dangling
all over.
I can believe that I haven't heard of this, but I can't believe that you haven't heard of this, Karen. Yeah. This is so up your alley.
I know.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Also, fans of a webcomic, The Oatmeal, might know this one, but I actually didn't see this strip before. I saw it afterwards while I was doing the research, and it's a funnier take. It's a illustrative take on how the mating actually, or not the mating, but the fusing actually happened from the webcomic, The Oatmeal. A last tidbit about the anglerfish. So it actually went through, there's some controversy in the animal world to determine what is the smallest vertebrate.
Okay.
You know, this is back in 2012. They found a new species of frog. And you might have seen pictures. It's like on a coin and it's tiny. And it's about 0.3 inches. Was given the title, the smallest vertebrate.
Mm-hmm.
However, all the anglerfish scientists are like, well, you know, the male, that might be the smallest vertebrate species, but the smallest vertebrate animal is the male anglerfish. And then, of course, people are like, well, it's a parasite. That animal cannot survive without a host. So you can't really count it by itself. So there's all this like controversy and debating. How do we measure the smallest?
I guarantee you the frog and the anglerfish do not care. They don't care who wins this. Yeah.
They just want to survive.
I didn't get my smallest vertebrate check in the mail.
Oh, that'd be so cute to give them
a tiny check.
Yep.
A little county fair first place. Nice ribbon.
Right.
That was some egg excruciating nightmare fuel. Good job.
Ding.
Ding.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Yesterday afternoon, we were spending a lovely day out in Carmel, down by the coast. We saw some seals and sea lions and knew I had to prep for the show. And on the way back, we're driving back. I'm like, oh, what am I going to do for eggs? You know, and my wife is like, oh, hey, you should talk about Fabergé eggs. Have you done that? I'm like, oh, that's a great idea. Fabergé eggs. You know, like we all know it. No one knows anything about it. So I get home, crack open our Slack channel, and I see that Chris has already reserved. Hey, I'm going to talk about Fabergé eggs on the show. Yeah.
So I actually have a segment about Fabergé eggs. So We have talked on the show before about loss aversion, not wanting to take a loss on something, buying something and then not wanting to sell it for less than you bought it for, or going to the casino and wanting to get back the money that you, that kind of thing. So we all, nobody wants to take a loss on anything. This happened, in about year 2004. This very thing happened to a scrap metal dealer somewhere in the American Midwest. And I say that because his name and location are anonymous. He exists, but he does not want the world to know who he is or where he lives. Huh. And you will find out why very soon. But in 2004, he went to a flea market and he found sort of an objet d'art, a golden egg. It was made, definitely made out of gold. This guy was a scrap metal dealer. He knew what it was. It was made out of gold. It had three little sapphires on it and it had a diamond. And when you pressed the diamond, the egg opened up reveal a gold watch. And so he ended up buying it at this flea market for $14,000. It was that kind of flea market. The seller knew what they had. I mean, it's this piece of solid gold, you know. They're not going to let it go 50 cents. He bought it intending to melt it down. He was like, okay, if I buy this for like $14,000, I can get, he's thinking he's going to get like 15 to 16 to 17,000 back out of it, make a quick $1,000, end of story. But he might have overestimated the raw scrap metal value of the whole thing because he couldn't get anybody to pay him more than he had spent on it. He kind of messed up as far as like kind of estimating the scrap metal value of it. So he took this egg and he put it in his kitchen. From about 2004 to 2012 was in his kitchen. I mean, again, he knew it was worth money. He didn't want to sell it at a loss. He'd gotten into this thing and he was just like, I'm going to wait until somebody's going to pay me for it. Year 2012, he was like, all right, what am I going to do with this egg? What is this thing? He goes online and he does a Google search for egg and also Vacheron Constantin, which was the name engraved on the watch. That is a famous, I believe, Swiss maker of watches, even today, right? And had he searched for this 2 years earlier, he would have turned up nothing. Absolutely nothing. But in 2011, a couple of things had happened. People, collectors, had become aware of the possible existence of this particular artifact that he was holding. And now, because they had started looking for it, there was information about it online. And he had a Fabergé egg. So what is a Fabergé egg? F-A-B-E-R-G and then the E with the accent.
Fabergé. I just thought they're like egg ornaments.
Yeah. Well, you hear about it all the time. It's like, oh, you know, the rich millionaires, they don't have anything to spend their money on. They buy Fabergé eggs and you see a picture and it's like, oh, it's just a golden egg and
ornate.
It's got all jewels all over it. And it seems sort of ridiculous thing you would buy if you had way too much money, which is totally true.
Yeah.
You might not know the story of them. The House of Fabergé was a well-known jeweler in Imperial Russia, founded in 1842.
Russian.
It's Russian. They put the little accent on their name, make it sound a little continental, a little Frenchy. Yeah. By 1885, they were, they're very popular. I mean, this was the jeweler that you went to if you had a whole bunch of money and you wanted to get ornate custom things done for yourself. And Tsar Alexander III went to Fabergé in 1885 and said, I want you to make an Easter egg for my wife for Easter.
Okay.
And so what Fabergé created for them was pretty astounding. It was a golden egg just the size of a chicken's egg. So just imagine a chicken's egg made out of gold. It was enameled to look white. You twisted it open and opened it to find that the whole thing was made of gold. and you pulled out of the hollow golden egg a golden egg yolk.
Uh-huh.
You open the yolk.
What?
And inside, now it's getting pretty small now, right?
Yeah.
Inside the golden yolk was a tiny golden hen with ruby eyes.
Aww.
You open the hen.
What?
And inside the hen, there's a tiny golden egg. Replica of the imperial crown.
Oh.
And hanging within the crown. Well, again, we're getting super tiny
here.
They
went to town on this.
They're
really good at nesting things together.
And then hanging within the crown was a tiny pendant with a ruby. There was also included with it apparently a golden chain of normal size that the Empress Maria could wear the ruby or the pendant or the crown like around her neck if she wanted to. Yeah. So it was.
Wow.
Yep.
It's like a pop-up book.
So this is pretty freaking impressive, to say the least. So much so that the Tsar Alexander III commissioned a new egg every year for Easter.
Okay.
They all contained surprises when they were opened. Mm-hmm. And the part of the whole thing was, what was the surprise? Tiny portraits. Little miniatures of the palace,
That's cool.
Music boxes, more jewels, clockwork kind of things sometimes. And they, of course, they get just more and more creative and elaborate.
Yeah, you got to raise the bar each,
All in all, Fabergé made about 50 eggs. There was one per year for the Tsar, and then there were a few others for other like private clients, such as like the Rothschild family, which was this, one of the biggest, most moneyed families. They had one made. Alfred Nobel's nephew, Emmanuel Nobel, had one made, for himself. Do you want to hazard a guess as to why maybe Fabergé stopped making, these eggs?
The Russian Revolution.
The Russian Revolution came in and deposed the ruling families and nationalized the Fabergé company, and they all fled. They all got the heck out of Russia real fast. But the eggs became over the years like the ultimate collectible. If you, again, if you had $1 jillion, maybe you buy one of the Fabergé eggs from somebody else. Malcolm Forbes, head of the Forbes publishing family, bought 9 of them.
Wow.
How many are there in existence?
50-ish.
Oh my God. That's
Okay. Yeah.
That's like almost 20%.
Yeah.
He got into it.
Yeah. He got super into it. Bought 9. I mean, even just to find somebody who will sell you one in the first place.
Let alone 9.
He actually sold all of them for $100 million for the 9 eggs to Victor Vescoberg, who is a Russian collector, who is now, he actually owns 15 in total. He has a buttload of money, and he's put them all into a museum in St. Petersburg. So if you go to St. Petersburg, it's a privately owned museum. He still owns them, but you can go look at them in St. Petersburg. And yeah, and there have been, I mean, the Fabergé brand is still around. They actually, you can buy like egg-shaped pendants and earrings and things like that.
But it's not the pre-revolutionary.
Right. It's like the Fabergé eggs is a very specific list of a very, very, very few things. So back to the one with the watch in it that was found in America.
Is that really?
In the Midwest. Yeah. Oh, it was. So this is the reason they didn't know. So it was actually photographed. It was photographed in 1902 amongst the things of the Empress Maria. Hmm. But it was sort of faded, and it faded, but it was sort of zoomed out, like low quality. And they had assumed that this one had been found because there was another egg that sort of looked like it.
Okay.
But that wasn't it. And they had realized in 2011, they found a catalog for an auction that took place in 1964. And they saw it in there with a big description of the watch by Vacheron Constantin. And it had been purchased apparently by somebody in America, some really rich American. But it wasn't listed as a Fabergé egg. It was just sort of like a golden egg with blah, 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 blah. And so it hits the newspapers that year in 2011, the fact that they just realized this is out there. And that's the article that the scrap dealer turns up when he goes online to research it. Turns out it was the third imperial egg. It was the third one ever made. Yep. I mean, he sold it for an undisclosed sum of money to a collector. It's probably worth about $30 million. Now there's, I think, like 7 of them out there that have not been found, or they don't know the whereabouts of them. So,
man, your story, I was filled with dread when you were like, he's a scrap metal dealer and he couldn't sell it. And I was like, he melted it.
No. Yeah, that's what I thought.
He almost did.
Yeah, you're like,
he found somebody to pay him that would have melted it down, and nobody ever would have thought about it.
Never known.
And that's why you didn't say his name or where he was from, because he's like, and then I died.
No, it's because he lives in the Midwest, and now he probably has about $30 million. He probably doesn't want anybody knowing who he is or where he's from. Or can I just have $1 million?
Two things.
Just get back on my feet.
A, I didn't know they're Russian. I thought they were French because of the name.
Of course,
It's like Haagen-Dazs. You're like, oh, it's European. No, right. It's actually not. Number two, I thought Fabergé eggs were real eggs that people carved and did stuff to it. Like the original raw materials egg, and then they gilded it and stuff. But I know it's all gold and all jewelry.
Yeah.
Got it.
Mm.
Because mm-hmm. you see those eggs with the carvings and the hollow.
Sure, yeah.
Do you think that's where the plastic eggs with toys in them come from? Like for Easter, you get the
these were based on.
Those were based on. Okay.
Easter
I was like,
eggs.
Maybe it's just like a Russian nesting doll.
This is the moneyed version of those.
This is the money Kinder egg.
Yep.
I'm going to go home and check my attic.
You should. I mean, you should check one. You might have one up there.
I can't say there isn't one there.
Well, after all these good job brain stories of appraisal and Chris's stories about, like, treasures in your attic, it always makes me wonder. I was like, but then it makes me keep everything. I was like, I don't. I don't like stuff.
You can't even count on, like, I researched everything, so I know it's fine, because
you never know.
You know, in 2 years, maybe there's an article about it.
Right. Yeah.
So you should hoard all of your things.
The
lesson is.
The right message here. What, should I throw out this McDonald's wrapper?
You should thank it for its service.
Limited edition.
People, I think I talked about this, people do collect the styrofoam McDonald's containers. Because it's nostalgic.
Yeah.
And we threw them all away.
And they don't
make them anymore. Yep.
No, read that Marie Kondo book.
Well, I'm not saying it's a good idea. I'm just saying people do I'm not saying $1,000.
Do you remember the Transformer toys? They have them in Taiwan too. They're Happy Meal toys and they're like little fries that turn into a robot. Yeah, yeah. Those are cool.
Those are cool.
Cool story, bro. Yeah. That's it. Those are cool. All right, Colin, time to lay one last egg.
All right, I'm going to lay one last egg here.
Try real hard. Yeah. Close your eyes.
Yeah, just come over and get the narrow end in the right place first. I have a word puzzly quiz for you in the manner of our very own Chris Kohler. I'm inspired by some of the word puzzle quizzes he has done for us in the past. Every answer to this quiz will have the word egg, EGG, contained somewhere in the answer.
Whoa.
Okay.
It'll be people, places, things. Well, actually, no places.
Okay.
People or things.
Proper nouns possible.
I'll tell you if there's a proper noun. I'll be very clear. Mm-hmm. Get your buzzers ready. This will be perhaps a little bit of a lightning round. So remember, all of these answers, somewhere within the middle, not at the beginning or the end, will be the letters EGG.
Dana's cow buzzer is running. Oh, yeah, let's switch it with the horse. Yeah.
There you go.
All right. Thank you.
That's what it's like. So for example, if I were to say another name for a panhandler, you would say
beggar.
Oh, okay.
Got it. Everyone got it? We all good here?
I was like, egg scrambler? Like panhandle cooking pan.
Right. Oh, yeah. Oh. Okay.
All right. Here we go. A mid-tempo music style with the accent on the offbeat. Karen.
Adagio.
Oh, no. That is not what I was looking for.
Allegro.
No.
A mid-tempo music style.
Ooh. It is strongly associated with a island nation.
Oh.
Dana.
Reggae.
Reggae.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh.
Reggae music. R-E-G-G-A-E. Someone who smuggles contraband goods. Someone who smuggles contraband goods. Dana again.
A bootlegger.
Bootlegger. Oh, yes, exactly.
Yeah.
They're not quite jeans, and they're not quite tights. Chris.
Jeggings.
Yes, jeggings. The denim-appearing stretchy pants. I thought they were for women only, but I think there are jeggings for men now. Yes. I don't know
are
whether
you
to
get some?
I'm going to rush right out after the show and get some jeggings. Slang for a college party with on-tap alcohol available. Everyone.
Kegger.
A kegger, yes. Released in 2007, this popular game was inspired by pachinko machines.
Oh,
Dana should have it. She worked on it.
Peggle.
It is Peggle. I was born in 1947 and lived in Sacramento, California for 8 years in the early 2000s.
Oh.
Dana.
Arnie Schwarzenegger.
Arnold Schwarzenegger, yes. A slang term for a woman who is with child. Chris.
Preggers.
I would also accept Prego, but I was looking for Preggers, yes. I'm a TV character known for my sassy attitude, love of bonbons, and bouffant hairdo. Chris.
Peggy Bundy,
nice. Yes, played by the inimitable Katie Sagal. A pickup strategy designed to undermine women's confidence. everyone.
Nagging.
Yes.
Don't do it, kids.
Don't do it. Do not do it. Yes, I should also say yes, of dubious efficacy here. I was born in 1946 and earned the nickname Mr. October in the 1970s.
Oh.
I am a sportsman sports player. Mr. October. Chris.
Reggie Jackson.
Reggie Jackson. Yeah. Yes, wow, correct. Great. The baseball player, slugger. Yes. Made his name for his strong performances in October during the World Series.
He was a naked gun, right?
Yes. Also had a candy bar named after him.
What
candy bar?
It was just called the Reggie Bar. Yeah. He was extremely popular, transcendent athlete in the 70s. Yeah.
I must kill the queen.
If Morrissey showed up at your backyard barbecue, he might have one of these to eat. Karen.
Veggie burger.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Wow.
Karen, all over it.
Really predicating on my knowledge of Morrissey's eating habits.
A hard cheese, typically produced in large wheels. Dana, it's a two-word answer.
Okay, good.
Hyphenated.
Parmesan Reggiano.
You got it. Yeah. Parmigiano Reggiano.
I lost confidence, and then you said it was two words, and I was like, okay, I think I know.
I was bringing you along with me.
Yeah,
all right.
Thank you.
And the last one, in music, a technique where you play the notes of a chord independently instead of simultaneously. Chris.
Arpeggio.
That is an arpeggio, correct. Mm-hmm. Yes. All right, well, good job, guys. Yes,
cool.
That was...
No Clark Gregg?
No, yeah, there's only so many questions.
Also, that's at
here.
The end.
Yeah, I did promise they'd be in the middle.
Yeah. Okay. So no Simon Pegg.
Yep.
All right, and that is our eggy episode. Thank you guys for joining me, and thank you guys, listeners, for listening in. Hope you learned a lot of stuff about Chef Gordon Ramsay, the narrow end versus the wide end of the egg, what comes out of the duct.
Chicken earlobes,
anglerfish, and more. And you can find our show on iTunes, on Stitcher, SoundCloud, Spotify, and on our website, goodjobbrain.com. And we'll see you guys next week.
Bye.
Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.